This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we're going to listen back to a conversation we had late last year about teens and vaping. The United States Food and Drug Administration says there's a teen vaping epidemic underway in this country and that the problem's just getting worse. The school district of Lee County is actually going to be hiring bathroom monitors for some of its high schools to try to deter teens from vaping. We're joined by a guest from the district as well as two addiction experts to learn more in the second half of today's show. But first, properly trained guide dogs have the ability to fundamentally transform the lives of those whom they're paired with, whether it be someone who has lost their ability to see or someone who maybe has seen too much, like a veteran with PTSD. On today's show, we're going to learn about the world of guide dogs and guide dog training and to highlight an upcoming walkathon at JetBlue Park in Fort Myers next Saturday, which aims to raise awareness about guide dogs and to raise funds to help them get trained and connected to people who need their help. I'm joined in studio by Jennifer Bryant. She's the director of philanthropy with Southeastern Guide Dogs up in Tampa. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're also joined in studio by Roy Kennedy. He is a puppy raiser. Roy, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
And we're joined in studio by one of my favorite kinds of guests. It's Little Puppers, a dog named Culligan, who is in training. He's laying on the floor now, so unable to say thanks for allowing me to be here. Anyway, we invite our listeners to join the conversation. The number to call is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook or at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So, of course, I got to start with Culligan. He's right there in the middle, laying on the floor, relaxing himself. He's a puppy that's in training.
Yes, he is in training. He's 14 months old. He will be going back to the school for his formal training next month.
Oh, okay.
The month of May when he hits 15 months old. And he's been out here since he was about 10 weeks old. And he got his name simply because he was sponsored by the Calendar Girls here in Lee County who raise money to sponsor dogs. They go out, they perform, and they've sponsored 22 dogs now.
Oh, that's
for
great.
Us and named him. And so,
so they named him Culligan because he will be summoned as Hey Culligan Man, right?
Yes, he will. He will.
I'm sure. I think I might have heard that jingle. So do all dogs start as a puppy?
Yes, we breed all of our dogs on campus. We have a whelping and a neonatal unit. They are all delivered right on campus, and we raise them on campus up until the 10-week period when they do go home with their puppy raisers, and they live with their puppy raiser for about a year, year and a half.
All right. And then after the year and a half, then they go into the formal training program.
They do. We have it set up as a university, so they come back for their assessment and they choose their career is what we like to call it.
What's your major? I'm majoring in PTSD assistance, majoring in visually impaired. I think that's really interesting. I guess you evaluate them and kind of then put them in what program they're going to need to do.
Correct. The dogs tell us what they want to do. So none of them are forced into a career that they don't particularly like. If we have a dog who likes to sniff too much, not going to be a good guide dog, that dog may end up working with law enforcement. We do transfer some of them out to law enforcement agencies. My favorite story is we have a dog in the Keys who sniffs for lobster during the off season. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
How do you sniff for that? Are you sniffing underwater?
Probably checking boats and things like that.
Oh, okay, to bust people who are getting lobsters and they shouldn't. Okay,
yes.
I thought he was like a truffle hunting dog or something, you know. But no. That's so great. So they kind of like by their behaviors, you can determine what their strengths are going to be. And I mean, a trained eye would be able to see that more so than like me looking at them.
Correct. Our trainers know exactly what to look for. They know which dogs are going to work well in the guide dog program. They can identify those that are going to be more comfortable in a service line.
That would be
line.
Culligan that just kind of groaned in.
Yes, I think he wants to be a guide dog. He seemed to have groaned right when I said that. So we'll find out soon.
This is how they communicate. So tell me about Southeastern Guide Dogs. How long has it been around? And does it just serve Southeast, this whole area, this part of the country?
Southeastern Guide Dogs has been around since 1982. Started out as a two-bedroom house that was donated to the organization as it formed. And we have service dogs and guide dogs all over the country. We have over 450 teams under our auspice at any given time.
So what is there a certain breed of dog that you work with mainly?
We use primarily Labrador Retrievers. We do breed some Golden Retrievers. And we will, on occasion, cross them. And we will have what we call a Goldador. And it gives you the great mindset of a Golden Retriever, but it gives you some shorter hair like a lab.
Yeah, golden retrievers shed a lot. But labs kind of do too sometimes.
Well, they do, yeah. but they don't get knots in their fur like a golden retriever does.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also it helps to expand our genetics in doing that. And most people that look at a golden retriever say, is that a lab? And you go, yes.
Yeah, whatever you want it to be.
Yeah,
because
they pretty much look the same.
Yeah.
And, you know, people ask, you know, why is that golden retriever black? Well, it's just like a lab. Color means nothing. They're yellow, they're black.
Well, Culligan here is a little yellow guy.
Yes.
Right?
And he is a pure lab.
How has he been doing so far as a puppy?
Culligan is superior in that he is very good at all of his requirements around the home, which means that he's very well behaved. He doesn't bother anything or anybody. When he gets his biggest problem is he's friendly.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks everybody was put on this earth to pet him.
Well, they kind of were.
You know. This is one thing that we – because our dogs are so friendly, it is one thing that we have to work on. And when he has his jacket on, he does know that he's under different rules than when his jacket is off. When his jacket is off, he is a dog.
I mean, it's tough because puppies are puppies, you know?
And that's why we don't start formal guide training until they're 14, 15, 16 months old. You can't train a puppy who all of a sudden, you know, will get distracted by something. You want to wait until the maturity sets in, and then you can put down the real serious rules.
I'm not really familiar with Labradors because I haven't had Labradors myself. But I'm wondering if they're different from little dogs, which is what I'm used to, because it seems like they don't stop acting like nutty puppies until like 2.5 to 3 years old.
I have a lot of people walk up to me and go, how old's your dog? And I tell them, you know, it might be 10 months old, 11 months old. And they go, I got a 6-year-old lab at home that doesn't act anything like that. And it starts off with genetics.
Okay.
These are not field dogs. These are not hunting dogs. Now, do they have hunting instincts built into them? Yes. But they are not true hunters, which just want to run all the time. The simple fact that we start training literally within days of their birth with their eyes still closed, their ears still closed, they are being handled. They are being taught. And our puppy kennel staff starts on training procedures that they think are just games.
Uh-huh.
But they are actual training. And when they come out to puppy raisers, not only do we socialize them by taking them everywhere with us, they literally – we teach them about 40 commands they become familiar with. So they are starting – they start training. We start training very, very young.
But you also have to train the people because my Aunt Kathy is a puppy raiser. They have to know what they're doing too, right? What kind of training is involved in becoming a puppy raiser?
Well, right here we have, I don't know, 30-some group puppy raiser groups. This our local one here is Lee and Collier County, basically. And we have a volunteer trainer who is he's been a professional trainer for 40 years, but he works with us to train the people. Like he says, we meet every week and have training sessions. But like he said, he can't train a dog in an hour a week. So he trains the puppy raisers. We have a complete training manual that we follow. All the dogs from the school will birth, 300 of them this year. They all will grow up being trained the same way with the same commands no matter where they are, whether they're in Texas being raised or here in Fort Myers. They will learn the same things.
Well, I'm just as there might be some dogs that are just not going to make it as a trained dog, I would imagine there might be some puppy raisers that might not make it as a puppy raiser too that might fail. I don't want you to name names. But when you said earlier that they can't get on the couch, that would be hard for me, you know? So there are certain boundaries they have to respect. But, I mean, I'd imagine there are some people that can't really be a puppy raiser.
You have to accept that idea that you have to follow our rules before you get the dog. And yes, there are people who, no, I want a dog up on the couch with me, you know. Our problem is
– I would say at the beginning, no, but I mean I would cave. I mean, look at the eyeballs. I mean, look at this guy.
The same thing with – you can't feed them from the table.
Yeah.
You can't – if you feed them from the table at home and then you go to a restaurant, if they're not getting food from your table, they're going to the next one.
Yeah.
They're
going to
keep looking for it. And so we have specific rules that we have to follow. And honestly, our dogs are happy being on the floor or happy in their dog bed, whatever it is, but they don't know what getting up on the couch is, so they don't miss it.
It just hasn't been an option.
That's why we don't let them do it once, because then they'll miss it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. This is why my dog is not very well behaved, because I am not that firm of a trainer. So what kind of things are the dogs that are going through your programs trained for? I mean, people generally know for people who are visually challenged, helping see and guide people around. What other things do these dogs do?
Sure. We have our guide dog program. That's what launched us in the beginning. We have a service line. So we do train service dogs for veterans. Some of them are suffering from PTSD. Some of them may have mobility issues. There's various conditions in which we can match a dog to help an individual.
So PTSD is kind of a mobility issues are more of a mechanical thing. But PTSD, mm-hmm. What does a dog do to help with PTSD? And how can they detect that the veteran, for example, is having an episode or having an issue?
The dogs are trained to look for cues. And they're trained to do very specific things. For example, some of our dogs may enter the home before a veteran in order to turn a light switch on, so the veteran is not exposed to dark unnecessarily. That may be something that affects them and bothers them. Loud noises might be something that affects veterans, and our dogs are trained to they have it's a hug command, and they will actually put their paws on their person and sort of put pressure on them slightly in order to calm them down. There's also a block command, where if the dog sees some sort of a danger, they will get in front of the person and stop them.
Does it give a feeling of security?
Yes. They definitely give security. Some of them are even trained to go fetch medicine if they pick up on a cue that a person is experiencing some sort of emotional problem. They know where the medicine is. They can go get the bottle and bring it to them.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned also earlier some of the dogs are trained to work with kids.
Yes.
With special needs or different things. Tell me about that a little bit.
Sure. We have a Gold Star Family Program. So we have therapy dogs that are given to families of those who've lost someone in active service. And that dog becomes a pet for that family. And oftentimes there are children in the family, and it's a therapy dog. It provides comfort. We also have a children's program where we will give a dog as a pet to a young child, say 7 or 8 years old, who is experiencing vision loss at a young age. So we know that person, once they grow old enough, is going to need a guide dog. But let's say they don't know how to care for a full-size dog. So mm-hmm. we're going to give them one as a pet so that they can learn to, wash it and really get a real true feeling for what it takes to be a dog owner.
Mm-hmm.
So they will go into we call it their career as a pet for a child.
And no, career. I'm not giggling at that. I love it as a career. They are working.
Yeah. And then once that child is old enough for a guide dog, they will come back and receive a fully trained guide dog from us.
How long does it take to get a fully trained guide dog through the program?
Sure. They're with the puppy raiser for about a year and a half, and then the training on campus is approximately another year. So the dogs are between 2-3 when they go home with
– 2 years old before they're really trained and mature enough to do it.
Mm-hmm. So tell me a little bit about some of the people that have been impacted by this. I'm sure that you don't work only with the dogs, but you get the dog to the person, and how does it open up their life?
Well, many of our graduates will tell you that they wouldn't walk outside alone before. They regain their independence. They can go to the grocery store by themselves. They're no longer reliant upon a spouse or a caregiver. It's true freedom. The dogs are trained to take somebody with limited vision or none at all to the bus stop. They can hop on the bus, go wherever they like. The dogs, they know what to do and how to do it. And so it's truly giving someone independence and freedom.
I did a show about comfort animals a couple years ago. Have you gotten much in the way of pushback from, stores or public places that have been maybe taken advantage of by numerous comfort dogs or just pets that are being called that, that aren't really trained animals. And then you have a guide dog that is actually working and then being told they can't be there. Have you had any of that experience?
Yeah. Comfort dogs or emotional support dogs basically have rights with housing. They have rights with the FAA for flying. They don't have any rights to go into a restaurant. They don't have any rights to go into a store. But so many of the people that have them go online, pay $50, get a jacket that says service dog, and then call them a service dog, which they are not, because they are not trained to do things for a specific disability. And yes, we hear from it all the time because and store owners, restaurant owners, they'll tell you it, we are just so inundated with these dogs that are not trained.
Yeah.
That people aren't paying attention to anyway. They'll tell you it's their service dog and it's on a 12-foot expandable leash, you know, wrapping their leash around somebody else's legs. And it hurts the service dog people that have true service dogs. I don't want your little untrained comfort dog on a 12-foot lead bothering my dog while it's working, period.
Or even setting putting a bad taste in a restaurant owner's mouth, for example.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, kind of pushing those boundaries. And I think that sometimes restaurant owners or even store owners might not – I mean, I'm sure that they've gotten copies of what the actual law is, but it's kind of uncomfortable to go and have that conversation, you know. So I think it's kind of incumbent upon the people that have comfort animals to be sensitive to that and aware of the fact that their animal, while very comforting, is not fully trained.
And the laws in Florida are changing, and the penalty is getting to be much more severe for people who say, this is a service dog, and it is not.
Mm-hmm.
When it's shown that it's not a service dog, it is a misdemeanor, and it is – you can be fined for it. So
what should people look for on a service dog? How can you – I mean – I can tell the difference between, you know, a Pomeranian on a 12-foot lead that's extendable. I mean, obviously there's a difference there. But is there a certain designation on a vest from a fully trained real-life service dog?
You would like to think that, but it is not required by the American Disabilities Act, period.
Okay.
There is no identification required by the American Disabilities Act.
Uh-huh.
And that in itself tends to be a problem when – you can't. There is no certification that the government hands out that says this is a service dog. Period.
Mm-hmm.
All of our dogs, either they wear a jacket that does say Southeastern Guide Dogs. We're internationally accredited school.
Yeah.
So we know it's a trained dog, but just so many of them just have a vest on with just a patch on it says service dog. And
additionally, our puppy raisers are given a card that lists the Florida statute. So if a business owner had a question and they weren't certain, they can look at the card, pull it up, and then they'll understand a little bit more about the legality. Our graduates also will carry something along those lines. So we're trying to be proactive in making sure that anyone that has a Southeastern Guide dog, whether it's a service person or a visually impaired person, we want to make sure that they're empowered so that they don't run into a situation like that where they're questioned when they really shouldn't be.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay, back to the good news part. How do you decide what person is going to go with what dog? Is there like a meet and greet thing? Do you have like get to know the potential dogs thing?
Well, our trainers will actually meet with the candidate for the dog first. Our trainer will get to know the person's if they live in an apartment, if they have a big yard, what their lifestyle is like. Are they a fast walker? Are they tall? Are they short?
Mm-hmm.
And then the trainer will identify 2 to 3 dogs that might be a match for that person. So when the person does come to our campus and they will live on our campus for 3 weeks, they're able to basically do a trial run with the dogs that the trainers have identified. Yes, a test drive, so to speak.
So how does somebody get involved if they want to become a puppy raiser or if they want to get involved in the training facility or learning more about how to do something with that?
Our website has a lot of information about becoming a puppy raiser, who to contact. It also has information about volunteering. We have events that will take place. The one you mentioned earlier this weekend, our walk-a-thon. There will be knowledgeable people there if anyone is curious and just wants to ask questions. It's a free event open to the public. They're welcome to come.
So that's a great opportunity to get to know some of the people that are already involved in mm-hmm. it anyway, and whether it is kind of like if it's your crowd, if it's your pack.
Yeah. There you go.
So yeah. It's the walk-a-thon is next weekend. Where is it again?
It's at JetBlue Park mm-hmm. up on Daniels. But it starts 9 o'clock in the morning. Like Jennifer said, it's free. It's just a fun day.
Are people supposed to bring their dogs?
Yeah, they more certainly can bring their dogs to that.
Even if they're the untrained ones.
All dogs are welcome, as long as they're kind.
if they have an expandable leash, we will ask them to lock it down.
Yeah, well, you have to with some of these dogs. Well, I know my dog.
But it is amazing when you see a couple hundred dogs there, and literally they are all getting along. Once or twice all morning, you might hear a bark.
Yeah.
And it's for no reason whatsoever. They just wanted to bark.
Just saying hi. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of the show. But I want to thank my guest, Jennifer Bryan, the Director of Philanthropy with Southeastern Guide Dogs. Jennifer, thanks for coming down to the show. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
And I also want to thank Roy Kennedy, a guide dog puppy raiser. Roy, thanks so much for being here today.
Thank you.
And Culligan, thanks for being so calm and only groaning one time during this segment. Southeastern Guide Dogs Fort Myers Walkathon is next Saturday, April 13th at JetBlue Park in Fort Myers. You can find a link for more information on our website, gulfcoastlive.org. When we return, we're going to listen back to a show we did late last year about the rise of teen vaping. According to health officials, the problem is still growing. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.